The Secrets of Stargate is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Stargate. I'm Dom Bettinelli of the StarQuest Network, and I wanted to start this show briefly with a note that this is an episode we recorded a few months ago to thank our patrons at sqpn.com/give for their generosity in making this and all the shows at StarQuest possible. We gave them early exclusive access, but now, a few months later, we're making it available to you to show you one of the benefits of becoming a patron of StarQuest. Our panelists had a great time discussing the Stargate Origins webisodes, and so now we bring you this show, and we hope you enjoy it.
You're listening to The Secrets of Stargate.
General West, Jackson has identified the seventh symbol.
All right, here we go. We are about to try to make a connection.
All we gotta do is bust out of here, commandeer the ship, and fly on home.
Indeed. You say that a lot.
I know that this could be dangerous. But this is our job, right? It's what we signed on to do.
It was never about going home. It's about getting us to where we're going.
Hi, I'm Jack Berezini, and welcome to The Secrets of Stargate, which is made possible by you, our patrons, on Patreon. I'm Jack Berezini, and joining me today are Father Corey Stika. Hi, Father.
Howdy, Jack.
And Lisa Jones. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Jack.
And Victor Lambs. Hey, Victor.
Hey, Jack. This is a Patreon episode, right?
Yes, it is.
Does that mean we could swear?
No.
That's going to be a question for Dom.
We will eventually release this into the main feed, but this is for our patrons first.
Yes.
You'll get to hear our impressions of this glorious episode.
Right. For our patrons, we decided we would go ahead and do an episode of Secrets of Stargate covering the 2018 web series / direct-to-video film, I guess it is now, Stargate Origins. And if you're interested in being a patron, if you're not already are, which I assume you would be if you're hearing this soon, you can go to patreon.com/StarQuest and you can join on there. There's lots of fun perks. You get early access to these patron episodes and lots of other things. So I definitely recommend checking it out. And as I said, we are covering Stargate Origins. This is the 2018 web series that was MGM's launch title for their Stargate Command digital platform. And I don't think Stargate Command is still around, although they
lasted 2 years.
Yeah.
I think they shut down during COVID, if I remember right.
MGM's whole new media wing, a new form is completely gone now. Yeah. And this was one of their big things.
Yeah, it was interesting to do research on all the production companies around this, and how most of them are no longer in existence. But it is cool that they did a lot of interviews and different behind the scenes things for older Stargate series on Stargate Command. You can actually get pretty much all of that on YouTube for free. Like, they did move that over to a YouTube channel. So,
by the way, I just looked it up. It lasted less than 2 years. It started in 2018 and they closed it up at the end of 2019.
Ooh, that's rough. And so Origins is a prequel that explores Dr. Langford. It's the young Dr. Langford and her father, Paul Langford. Back in Egypt in 1928, they have the... And this is a prequel to the original Stargate movie and to SG-1. We get to see the gate activated for the first time. We get to meet a young Kasuf. Get some new interesting takes on the Gould. And you get your Indiana Jones Nazi villains. Yeah, it's something. So, what were your thoughts on this, Father Corey?
So, of all the shows in all the TV episodes that involve the Stargate, this was definitely one of them.
Was it?
It wasn't one of the good ones. It wasn't one of the okay ones. This is just bad. Now, there are things that were pretty good. There are some things that we'll talk about that we enjoyed. But by and large, this was, even the special effects were miserable in this one. And it was originally released as a webisode, and I'm one of those, and I'm probably our other panelists here did the same, paid for the subscription to watch this little 10-minute webisodes when they first came out. And it was it was barely tolerable when you watched it as a webisode. It's not tolerable in an hour and 45 minute long movie.
I do have to ask, though, because I hadn't watched Stargate when this came out originally, and I only saw this, thankfully, I only saw this after I had already started watching SG-1, because I think if I'd started with this, I might not be hosting this show. Mm-hmm. But was it just nice to have new Stargate out?
You know, no,
it was... before we saw it?
Yeah, well, saw it, was, you know, everybody was excited because there's going to be a new streaming service dedicated to Stargate. If I remember correctly, there was supposed to be like an Origins series, basically. This was like the launcher where they were going to do different characters and different events, kind of the origin stories of them. So like in theory, we could have got an origin story of Raw and stuff and, you know, and different, you know, but this was so bad, it just bombed. And so it never happened. But it was, again, as you said, the launch for the Stargate Command streaming service.
Yeah, now MGM is owned by Amazon, so you can actually watch this on Amazon Prime. That's where I watched it, but I hope that the producers who are working on the new show take the lessons learned from this and make sure not to repeat that.
Yep.
And they'll actually have some money behind it this time, so that'll be good. What about you, Lisa?
Gosh. So to answer your question, when it first came out in 2018, I remember being super excited that there was this new Stargate show and, you know, it was a prequel, which, you know, lots of people do prequels. So it was kind of cool and fun and very exciting, you know, and then we watched it. And gosh, I want to say that there are parts of it that show promise, that there were little, you know, maybe plot things, the fact that they tried to tie it to parts of the movie or parts of the pilot of SG-1. Like, they did try, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I can't even put a finger on it. Like, why? It's just, it was campy. Is that, it felt like a cross between, like, young Indiana Jones and, like, The Mummy or something. It was, like, this weird...
Not a good cross of young Indiana Jones and The Mummy.
It was so over the top. Like, you're just... Like, somebody slap her and then slap... Yeah, I mean, it's just, like... And then the villains are, I don't know, you know, it's just a little too much.
Why is the Nazi wearing her underwear? I don't.
Yeah.
It was like a weird fan fiction, you know? So I don't know. It was painful. Y'all made me rewatch it.
Yeah.
I don't know if SQPN is going to pay for the therapy for watching this episode.
We're going to need group therapy.
Yeah, this is our group therapy, I think.
Well, I've already notified that they have to at least triple my pay, which, of course, as was that you that posted it, or Victor, the
hazard pay?
Yeah,
Cobb quote.
Yeah, from Firefly. Let's hear, nothing divided by nothing is...
Yeah. That was, I think, on the Discord.
Yeah.
But, yeah, oh boy. Yeah, so there are 430 reviews of this on IMDb. If you want to know what I thought about this, just read the first line of every one of those reviews. No, it's... People tried really hard. I don't know what sort of show or movie they thought they were making, but they tried really hard. It's kind of telling when really the best thing about whatever you're making is the Nazis. And most of the actors with one big exception, I think, you know, were really charming and, you know, were charismatic and stuff. And I think there's only like one or two actors who really let the production down. Unfortunately, one of them is playing the title character. But when this came out, yeah, it was like, oh, cool. It's new Stargate show. Wait, it's 10-minute webisodes, and then already that's one red flag, and it's a prequel, and that's another red flag, because prequels immediately, as soon as you mention it, they have a continuity problem, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're either relaunching the show and changing the continuity, or they can only go as far as what you've seen. And this show goes, you know, way further than what we've seen. You know, there was, you know, Catherine was one of the first people through the Stargate instead of, you know, Ernest and stuff. And Torment,
but you didn't remember it. And yeah.
Yeah. And then they you know, take care of that at the end in the most unintentionally funny way possible by like killing everybody, wiping everybody's mind, yes, making them mindless slaves. And it's the funniest thing because you're like getting down towards the end. You're like, oh, wow, this like a lot has happened here. How are they going to like write this into the continuity mm-hmm. of the show? And they don't. They just kill everybody and wipe their memories. And it's just like, why did I just watch this thing?
None of it matters.
Yeah. None of it matters.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to start by saying some things I liked about
it. Oh, yeah, yeah, let's do that.
Balance
yeah.
this out. I think that the story and the plot, if you just take that, like, the idea, I think it's a good idea. Like, 1928, the Nazis have access to the Stargate, and they go through and have to... Was it 38?
28 it is when they found it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. But
it's when they found the movie footage that they showed at the beginning that was much better than the rest of the movie.
Yeah. But on the, like, if you just look at the plot and the story, like it's a good idea. It's just I don't think the execution was really there. I thought the costuming was interesting. At least they were trying to do something different. And I think you can see in the production that they did the best they could with what they had. And special effects weren't great, but I mean, that's also a lot of other Stargate where it's not fantastic. So none of that bothered me. And I did really like Siobhan Aladdin.
Yes.
As what's the character's name? As Wasif.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was really good. He played his like comedic side character role really well, really well. I think he was probably the best one in the movie.
The actor playing Kossuth, I think, also really shone through. Yeah. And he's actually the new cast. He's the one, Daniel Rashid. He's the one who has the biggest, you know, career going following this.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah. They should have called it Origins Kossuth, in my opinion.
I did like Connor Trinneer. I think he did a good job as Professor Langford. But again, he was one of the few that could actually act. Oh, I mean.
Well, yeah, he couldn't do much. You know, his hands were tied.
Yeah.
For most. No, I mean, basically what he does is he sits there and he's like the computer translator on Star Trek. You know, he translates back and forth, or else he sits there in a corner. You can see the spirit gum around his fake mustache, you know, still kind of shining when the light hits it right.
It is clear that this was very low cost film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tried to figure out how much
little
it
money
was
on this as possible.
Yeah, there's a lot of digital drop-in effects that are very apparent. Lots of that. I don't even know how to describe it, really. Like, I'm not a filmographer, but you throw in those, like, drop-in, like, lens flares and fuzziness to hide the edges of your productions. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of that. It was very, very fan film. But it was cool that they had an actual physical Stargate. Like, that would have been something that would have been easy to just have it be a matte painting or CGI.
I kind of wish they had done a matte painting because the physical Stargate look literally cheap and plastic.
And the thing too is like you couldn't tell for the first 3 10-minute episodes that it was a physical Stargate because they didn't really interact with it. They I mean, they did later on, but like it looked like they were just standing in front of a green screen even though they were standing on the set. And I think it's just because the lighting was, you know, they looked backlit so you could see the edges around them and it made it look like they were standing in front of a green screen or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, So who's playing Catherine in this? Oh, yeah. Ellie Gall, an Australian actress, is playing Catherine Langford in this. And she is very, as I would say, maybe like headstrong and some might say girl boss. I would say girl bossy.
Yeah.
Maybe would be a polite way because she spends the first half of it just like ordering people around and like hitting them and like, you know, manipulating them into helping her and. You know, it's very yelling unpleasant character. Yeah. I mean, strident would be the word, maybe.
Not likable, not believable. Yeah. I mean, it's 1938. I don't know. I've watched a lot of old movies and I don't remember any female characters acting like that.
Yeah. Yeah. They needed someone more of, I don't know, like a Katharine Hepburn or someone, you know, like who could take charge and stuff. Philip Alexander's James Beale. I thought he was excellent with what he was given to do. He plays a young British mm-hmm. intelligence or army officer who meets Catherine in the market, and they're going to go on a date. But instead they go through the Stargate, and then at the end he's shot and killed. So we don't have to worry yeah. about what happened to him.
That didn't work out well.
yeah.
Yeah.
At least they're looking for him.
Well, and then he was so basically incompetent. I mean, she was being the girl boss and yeah. he was kind of like, I don't know what to do.
When okay. did the bullets go in? He wasn't quite that bad, but yeah.
No.
Yeah. And like Wasif was the only one of the three who was really likable in my opinion. And actually, mm-hmm. was helpful.
yeah.
Right.
Because like, he's the one he speaks. And I do like that they tied the fact that he's from Egypt and he knows mm. Coptic into yeah. being able to communicate with the people yep. on the planet. Like, I thought that was a cool touch. It was nice to see that.
Except for the fact that then you're, I don't know how far in, and then suddenly Catherine speaks it better than he does.
Because she just had to like realize that it was Egyptian and there was a Coptic right. vowel shift or
right.
something.
Exactly.
And now she can speak Gould, you know, language basically.
Well, because yeah, and it's well, the same thing with Professor Langford. Once he realized what the language was,
yeah,
he wasn't okay. great, but of course she was. Oh, he speaks it better than I do, and she's like, I'm speaking it fluently right now. So, and he was stammering and stuttering over it.
Yeah,
yeah. Wasif was only recognizing certain words, and she's just
yeah
whole phrases and sentences.
Yeah. The Catherine character in this is the linchpin of the story and also the absolute worst part of the story. And that's really where it falls apart.
Yeah.
No disrespect to
Ellie Gull,
right. but.
Which is too bad because Catherine Langford in SG-1 and the movie are both, you know, those. That's a great character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know. Just the way she was played was, she just seemed like a 19-year-old girl from 2018 and not the daughter of a professor who's fluent in Egypt and mm-hmm. is an archaeologist mm-hmm. in her own right. Like it did not work.
No, you didn't take her as a serious, educated, you know, has any clue of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we get, you know, the other faction or one of the other factions is the Nazis who, you know, those darn wacky Nazis always coming in and with their comedic hijinks.
Hotsy Totsy Nazis.
Yeah. Hotsy Totsy. Yeah. We get Alam Orion as Wilhelm Brucke or Dr. Brucke, who is leading the Nazis. He's the chief occultist for Hitler. Lots of talk of Hitler in this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And see picture of him too.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we get Sarah Navratil, who plays Eva Reinhardt, which is kind of the, you know, the Leni Riefenstahl character who's there to make the movie of his triumph and stuff, which I did like. I did like her character a lot. The fact mm-hmm. that, you know, she's enamored with Dr. Brucke at first, but then comes to see how evil he is, you know, the way he treats his own men, the way he mm-hmm. treats, you know, Dr. Langford and stuff. But I liked his plan is basically to make, you know, he realizes what the Stargate is. He's there to basically meet a god, show them a movie that shows them how mighty the Nazis are, and then basically form an alliance. And so I did like the whole thing with the projector. It's actually like a pretty good plan. Mm-hmm. Like he actually has yeah. a pretty good plan. Unfortunately, he's not surrounded by the most competent people.
It was cool that we got an Ed Wood cameo, though. He played that one Nazi.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah, Derek Heinrich. Yes, Heinrich, the comic relief question mark.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like comic relief in this one. It's like, and now they're all smoking pot and getting high. This is Stargate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like we could talk about that scene later, but yeah, Heinrich.
Oh, we will.
Heinrich is you know, he's the comic relief, and you're like, oh gosh, you know, this guy, he's like, you know, always like Trump stumbling over things like.
Mm-hmm.
Cross-dressing for some reason that's not explained in his character, and then at the end he just takes a staff blast to the chest and dies too. So
yeah, just walking up to the gate and blah, yeah. gone.
Yeah,
bad luck throughout.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get our Gould and her guard or hench person Aset
underling Gould. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
yeah.
What did y'all think of the costuming and like design they did with the Gould?
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was up with the eyes?
Because they're not human.
Oh yeah, but I don't know. It was creepy. And then put some pants on. I mean,
yeah,
yeah. They had kind of the booty shorts on or whatever those are called. I don't know, but yeah, I kind of, and then Asset, I kind of like expected like to be pelted with beads or something from a balcony or something the way she was dressed, but
yeah. Well, she wore the same outfit through most of the beginning, and then she changed her look like 5 times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought was, I mean, it was kind of cool, you know, that they were trying to lean into, like, I liked the part that she was a Gould who was there, you know, for Ra, and so she was going to try to use them to, you know, I liked all that. It just, and then we talked about the Harsesis child, but never did they really say what a Harsesis is or why it was bad. I mean, there are so many connections that if you didn't watch Stargate, would this, any of this make sense to you?
I mean, I think they did it in such a way that you get the gist of this child is like a forbidden child of Ra and they need to be gotten rid of, but you don't have to know what a Harsesis is really. Like, there's a lot of, I think that, and I guess this is another positive spin you could put on it. They did a good job incorporating references that made sense in the story they were telling, but also not making it so that if you'd never seen Stargate, you wouldn't get what was going on. Unfortunately, if you'd never seen Stargate and you watched this, you would never see any other Stargate. So
yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about the Goulds, I think, and I do like the Gould in this one. They do set it up within the context of the mythology of Ra. And, you know, you could at least see where this falls in the mythology.
And she's a little more, she's more sympathetic. Like, actually, when she breaks the staff of Horus, you know, the healing wand, that she actually, you know, you see a tear being shed for doing it. That so she actually, because she was pretty much in rebellion against Ra,
right?
And she was trying to use the people on the planet to rebel against him.
The magic stick number 2. I did like the line about, you know, you brought us to a land full of magic sticks, because you have the staff weapon.
Yep.
You have the wand of Horus that fixes things. And then you have, you know, Catherine's own magic stick, which is just a piece of wood that she uses to activate the ring transporter on Circuit's bracelet and stuff. So,
which is a good callback to the movie, because that's how they activate it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kept all the same kinds of effects and everything, which was nice. They didn't feel the need to needlessly just change the look and feel of the Stargate technology. So,
Or add like a bunch of new stuff we didn't need.
And I like the staff weapon with that big like curved blade on it. That was a cool variation that I don't think we've seen before. Yeah, it was interesting looking at. I find the production behind this to be more interesting than the actual movie, just because if you look up pretty much anybody who was involved, like the producers, most of the actors, the writers, well, it's funny. The one writer, what was his name? It's credited to 2 writers, Mark Evidson and Justin Michael Terry. Neither of them have anything else credited to them except for Mark Evidson has credits for this Catholic show called Catholic Central as like a set designer for it.
On IMDb.
Yeah, which I've not heard of that before. I don't know if that's apparently it's like
and
a
they have acting
grinning.
Credits.
Yeah. Catholic Central TV series 2017 to 2023. But it would be interesting to hear, and I looked this up and you can't find anything online about anything they've said. I would like to hear their opinions on the final product and like what they had envisioned. I do find it also very interesting that the director of this, Mercedes Bryce Morgan, if you go to her website now, there is not any mention of Stargate Origins at all.
Proudly displayed as the Captain Crunch commercial she did, but not Stargate Origins.
Yeah. So I would love to hear the people involved with this, their opinions of it, and like just that whole process, because it's interesting that MGM would, like, MGM's not a nobody company, but there's no real big names attached to this at all other than Connor Trenier.
Could you find anything about how he got involved in this? Because it does seem out of character. I mean, just to have one name, and he's been attached to Stargate.
Yeah.
I imagine the thought
from
was,
Atlantis, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's find an actor who is well-known in sci-fi circles and has some connections with Stargate, but isn't too expensive.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't doing a lot of work right now.
Yeah. And then you can bill him as the top casting.
Yeah, so, and then in addition to the Gould, we have the Abydosians, because we are on Abydos here. Mm-hmm. And so we get, as we mentioned, Kasif shows up and played perfectly, like a, you know, as a younger Eric Avari, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. By Daniel Rushed. We get another Bunny Way scene.
Yep, which we find out means sweet. You know.
Yes. Yep. And he's not in charge of the city of Nagata, though. He's in charge of a tent.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, he's not even in charge of that. He's like a kid.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But
If they ever decide to do any more prequels, I would be totally fine with him bringing him back as Kasif, because he mm-hmm. did really well. He got the mannerisms down and played mm-hmm. the character very well.
He did. He wasn't too over the top. He mm-hmm. played it really in line with the movie mm-hmm. and the first Stargate SG-1 episodes.
Yep.
Are the tent people mining? They're not mining Nakuta, right? Or what do they do other than just hang out all day?
Yeah, I would assume that they're mining, part of the mining crew as well. I don't know. Or they're just like a caravan.
Well, we did have the guy that was like mopping the floors and cleaning the Stargate in the beginning. So maybe like the hospitality cleaning.
Wasn't that
crew?
Kasif?
I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was actually him.
So he's the janitor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like because Ra had been gone for a while, things had kind of fallen out into disorder, and they were just there doing what Aset was. They were like her lackeys, basically serving her.
Well, and she says at one point that this is my best servants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they weren't scared of her. They very much, she was their god, but they weren't, you know, they weren't fearful in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we get a dinner scene, which is very reminiscent of the original movie. Although they, mm-hmm. as you had mentioned, Victor, they decide to light up at a certain point.
Yeah.
And overemphasized it, like
yes,
yeah. If
and that leads to all sorts of sexy hijinks.
Yeah. Exactly, they could have done the whole like tastes like chicken or something, you know, instead. Or, but
well, they've got all this weird looking food, and of course, you know, they're not eating it because weird looking food. But it's like,
I mean, it looked pretty good to me. It looked Middle Eastern cuisine's good, and this has got to have some relation to that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the joke I liked is when I've forgotten his Beale asks Wasif, like, hey, does any of this food look familiar to you? And he's like, how would any of this look familiar to me?
Yeah,
like,
it's from a different planet, different plants. Yeah,
yeah. And he's like, but it's like Egypt, it's like, not the food.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Not the food. That was good.
Again, they played well off of each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then
there
was one part, though.
We got to talk about it. About the holding hands.
Oh, more than holding hands, yeah.
Well, that's later on.
It's implied, yeah.
You know, after Beale and Catherine go spend some time together, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
then there's a scene where Wasif and one of the
Motok.
Tribesmen, was that? What was his
Motok
name?
Motok is the... Motok. Yeah, Motok, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They start holding hands. They start holding hands, and of course, I did kind of laugh when Beale said, "No one's held my hands." It's like you just got it on with the cute professor's daughter. You don't have to worry about someone holding hands.
Yeah,
and I think they telegraphed that pretty big, like in the beginning, even.
Yeah,
but
that was pretty clear that was going to end up. And yes, there was a kissing scene where a couple of pairs of people were kissing.
Yeah, so it's you know, Stargate's first explicit same-sex couple, and they wind up at the end being brainwashed into being the serpent and horse or fox guard for Ra at the end, too.
Yeah.
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 Which means they probably end up getting killed by Daniel at some point or Jack.
Yeah. But I thought it was a good, you know, we get a lot of origins in this. We get the origins of Kossuth. We get the origins of Horsehead Guy in the movie. So, you know, we're all covered there.
It was interesting when you think about the timeline and that, because Kossuth was young. I mean, characters, it was in the same timeline as SG-1 or the movie because, you know, you have the same people, but older. So it was, I kind of enjoyed that part of it because it did make you think about people who survived. This, you know, what I don't know, that they were still there and Kossuth and coming back,
and it was 60 years about, because you figure this was the late 30s to the mid 90s.
Yeah, and they don't, nothing that's thrown in here contradicts any of the other canon of the show, and I think it makes sense also for Kossuth's character that he would end up being more receptive to people coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think, does he get his mind wiped also?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, he gets his mind wiped, and then the suggestion is implanted that he's to go and become the leader of the city.
Yeah.
Right. Catherine is when her mind is wiped, she's given it's been implanted that she has to form a team to come back and take care of Ra when they have a weapon big enough to do it. Hint, hint, nuke, hint, hint.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So wait about 7 years.
We have to say, we have to say something about the Ra mask, and there's the way Ra is presented in this one too. Because he looks like a short person wearing like this huge like Mardi Gras like paper mache Ra head or something. It's not a good look.
Well, of course, it was supposed to be a stand-in for the original actor for Ra,
mm-hmm.
and he was fairly short, but it just didn't look good. It did not look good at all.
I didn't mind that so much because it was such a small, small moment, you know, by the end. And didn't bother me too much. I like that they tried with the big serpent guard helmets, and they tried with the Ra face helmet thing. And, you know, I just, at that point of the show, I was like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I did really like was the Stargate technology itself. When they're first, you know, manually dialing the Nazis, they're using the car battery like they did in 1969 to power the gate to dial it. They are dialing the gate address for Abydos from the movie and then the show.
Yep.
And then they can't get back because they don't know the point of origin symbol, just like in the movie and in the show. Right. And they go to the cave. And they see that point of origin symbol there, and then Catherine busts it off, which is, I think, why it's broken in the in the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I did appreciate the kind of, you know, the respecting the symbols aspect of it. And we do see, you know, because in the movie it's never explicit that the alien is a parasite like a Gould that comes in the show, but in one of the drawings in the book.
Right.
There's like a little serpent, you know, next to someone's head. So they do
you see the
bring
claw
that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Snake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't ever actually see a Gould on its own, though, which, given their limitations, is probably for the best. But
so if you think about it, they did a fairly good job of taking the canon from the movie, and staying within it.
Yeah.
You know, they continued the story in a way that, of course, doesn't line up with SG-1. But, of course, they fixed it. But they didn't do anything too crazy. You know, they fixed it. Yeah. Mind wipe. But, you know, they like you said, they stayed within it. They followed the way the Stargate works, the way that the Gould act. The Jaffa, the slaves, they kept it going, the characters. And so for that alone, I have to give them credit. Because, oh my gosh, how many other of these kinds of prequel or shows have you seen that have just gone off the rails.
They didn't pull a J.J. Abrams and just destroy the timeline so they could do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Discovery. I was worried about that in the beginning.
Yeah. I hate when that gets caught in my throat.
Yeah, and it is funny to contrast that with Star Trek, because for the most part, like everything, like the technology all looks the same. It looks like it belongs in the Stargate universe. Everything is makes sense for what they're doing. Whereas a lot of when Star Trek has done prequels, they've been notoriously bad at like, let's just completely redesign everything because we can. Like, this did not do that. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm kind of guessing that the writers were fans of Stargate based on the like paying attention to those little things and keeping everything in line with it. So it'd be.
Well, one little thing that they did keep in line is that they came out frozen.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing, of course, you saw in the show, especially at first, is they would come out and they'd have, you know, ice hanging off their hair and stuff like that. And they did keep that. So that was actually good continuity.
They didn't get violently thrown across the room like they did at first until Carter put inertial dampeners or something on the Stargate program. But
the room did shake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When they started up and before the wormhole connected.
Yep.
That just made me think of the initial scene where Catherine and Beal and Wasif go through is she kind of just manhandles them into going through the gate and throwing them through and is making fun of them. And then she does the Daniel thing. She just puts her hand through and then she like puts her face through and we get that whole transition.
Yeah.
It's like, so you're cool just checking these guys through, but you're going to just take it nice and easy.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
that was, yeah.
It was obvious with her that when she did the stick the face in, because the way her hair flowed, that it was, she was seeing her face in water. You know, of course, that's how they did the effect in the original movie when Daniel sticks his face in it, it, you know, is water, you know, he's sticking his face in basically a bowl of water. It was more obvious with her, although you know this is again where you know the CGI was. It just drove me nuts. The CGI, the Kowoosh and everything looked nothing like the original. It wasn't as smooth. No. It wasn't as you know because of course again the original was actual water. They used water to create those effects.
Yeah,
This didn't. This was all CGI. This was all computer generated, and it just wasn't impressed.
Yeah.
I did like when they did do the showing people go in and they did the right down the side of the Stargate for like almost all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that was good. And I think having a low budget probably helped it out in some respects because it meant that they couldn't do too much. There were no insane over the top battles. Like you got some like, you know, fist fights and gunfights, but that's all completely within what we know. But you didn't get like, and now Catherine commandeers the whole like Hatak fleet and is going to blow up something like.
So the limitations
there worked in its favor, I think.
And we did see Ra's ship destroy the temple and then build the temple that we knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was again a nice little to kind of explain why they didn't have the same set.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I did also like the scene where. When he gets the Nazi leader gets the Nakoda for the first time, he just like holds it up and he's like, a rock.
Yeah.
But that was done well.
and then he quickly learns that it actually, how powerful it actually is. And then he switches over to, I could be a god with this, you know, type thing. I could be bigger than Hitler. And that's where I do like, Ava Reinhardt's, the documentarians, you know, she starts off very enamored with him, but then gets enamored with Stefan, you know, the surviving Nazi soldier until Brooke shoots Stefan in a show of strength. And, you know, the joke earlier on was like, you know, what's my good side? And then, you know, he asks her, like, is this my good side? And she says, like, you have no good side.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thought that was some nice writing there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good callback.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I think we've probably about covered it. Did you have any other final thoughts?
Not here.
Yeah, I did like Kasif playing with the flashlight. I thought that was a nice little comedic bit because he's never seen a flashlight before, and he shines it in his eyes, shines it in his mouth and stuff. So there's some, you know, from the direction side of thing, I think this was very well directed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the writing, it's not Brad Wright, Malazzi and Mully Stargate writing. There's a lot of cringe moments in it. It could have been a lot worse. I think it could have been a lot better too. I don't know how much this cost. It probably was the best it could be for the money they had, but I will never ever watch this again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. Although I will say, sitting down and talking about it and analyzing it, I do appreciate it more than I did initially. And I appreciate, like, I think they get an A for effort, and there are still bits that you can glean out of it, even if the overall product is not
at best to see. At best to see.
I think what bothers me the most is what it could have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, fabulous idea, origin stories of these major characters, not major, but maybe, you know, characters we didn't get to delve into that much. You know, I love the idea. I love that they wanted to produce more Stargate. I hate to see, you know, there was no one from the original Stargate series involved in this, except right. for Connor Trinneer. There was nobody on the production side that I could find, or like you said, the writers, or I don't know. So it makes me fearful of what MGM's going to do next with Stargate.
Mm. I would hope that they've seen how Paramount and CBS have handled Star Trek, where when Star Trek was brought back, it was Discovery, which is Discovery. Mm. And it seems like they've course corrected, because we've gotten Strange New Worlds and the third season of Picard and Lower Decks, which are very much more in line with what Star Trek should be. Yep. And are really good. So I hope that they'll take lessons from that. And then also the fact that they have the Expanse writers working on it, and they're mm-hmm. good writers. And yeah,
I don't know if that's official, but that's been the
rumors,
isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, yeah. And also, they will have more than $5 to spend on it. So
maybe learned a little bit in 5 years.
It should have been kind of a warning when you look at the credits, and it only mentioned characters established by, in talking about Emmerich and Devlin. And nothing about SG-1 at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. Yeah.
I mean, these characters were created for the movie, but still, you know, I think you still mentioned the series there.
That's true, because they didn't mention any characters that came out of the series, only that came out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would also wonder if that has to do with how the rights shake out when you're crediting things.
I think so, yeah.
Probably so.
I kind of am sad now that we didn't see more from the main writer, Justin Michael Terry. Like, he didn't write more after this. I think it's a thankless job to try and write a new Stargate show. I think Stargate fans are, like, up there with Star Trek and Star Wars fans, very hard to please. I mean, we're easy to please, right? We know what we like. It's easy to give us what we like. But, you know, if you're greenlighting a new show, they just can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I if you look this up online, there is so much vitriol about it, so I just hope that everyone involved, like, I hope they don't take any of that to heart, or even like us talking about it. Like, my intention isn't to make anyone feel bad. Like,
again, like was said at the beginning, everybody who's involved in it doesn't have it on their CVs, so
that is very true.
It looks like they had fun making it, you know.
From the behind the scenes and the interviews. And well, and you think about it, Stargate fans are passionate, like you said, like about Star Trek fans or Star Wars fans or whatever. And maybe it's a sci-fi thing, but we're very passionate people, and we love our show, and you love the characters, and you want new stuff. But we want stuff. We want new stuff that reminds us of what we love about the old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what, when you see that there wasn't the connection to the movie and the series and what they did here, it's like all the people involved, just they had an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
So to all be new, trying to create something that the previous fans were going to embrace.
Well, and look at the reaction to Stargate universe, which, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of thinking about it, this was almost like an opposite reaction to Stargate universe, that, you know, Stargate universe became so dark and serious and depressing.
It's true.
That they tried to make something that was, you know, light and fun. And I think they just went a little too far.
And yeah. I think this is a trap that any science fiction franchise, or I guess probably not, I'm thinking of science fiction because that's what I know, but any franchise where you're making an installment in an established universe, mm-hmm. when the original Star Wars came out or the original Star Trek came out, they weren't trying to be Star Trek or Star Wars. They were just,
right.
this is the thing. Mm-hmm. But when you're adding to an established canon and getting into an established universe, there's all these expectations that go with it, which automatically make it harder.
For sure.
Awesome. I think that about wraps it up. If y'all have no other thoughts. Some, yeah. Like we said at the top of the show, this is a special patron episode for the SQPN patrons on Patreon. So if that's one of you, you'll be hearing this soon. And if not, this will be dropped in the main feed at some point in the future for everyone to enjoy.
And special thanks to all our patrons. You know,
yes,
we do
definitely.
This because, you know, because we enjoy doing it and you help us to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we could not do that without y'all support. So we really appreciate it. And until then, Father Corey, thank you for joining me and sharing the secret to Stargate.
Well, thank you, Jack.
And Lisa Jones, thank you as well.
Thanks, Jack.
And Victor Lambs, thank you too.
Thanks, Jack. And I have nothing left to say. Haram, haram, I guess.
Funny way.
Funny way.
Once again, I'm Jack Berzini. Thank you for listening to The Secret to Stargate on StarQuest.
Nobody's ever tried to take my hand.
Right. We best be going.